Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
One, a two, a one, two, three, four. Rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
Don't tip the boat over.
Rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
You have no idea how long we practiced that.
Way too long. And now it's finally time to get into the episode itself. Oh boy, I really hope we don't include those 3 minutes of rehearsal. Hello, everyone. You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. So,
you're going to rock the boat today?
We're not going to rock the boat. Maybe a little. If you haven't heard, something was announced by Sheldon Menery and the Rules Committee for Commander, and it's that there is going to be a new group called the Commander Advisory Group.
CAG, for short, C-A-G.
Yeah, the CAG. And spoiler alert, I am one of the CAG members. I accepted a position on the CAG, on the Commander Advisory Group.
Congratulations, Josh.
Thank you.
You are a big deal now.
So the CAG is not part of the Rules Committee. It's a consulting gig, basically. It's an advisory role.
Yeah.
So they are going to sort of talk to the members of this group and use them to increase their perspective, get a little more of a broader look at maybe what's going on out there in the world of Commander so that they can get those opinions and take them to an account when they make their rulings, mm-hmm. bannings, rules changes, things like that. Also, one of the goals of the CAG is more transparency for the Rules Committee. So they chose a bunch of people in the content creation world so that we can kind of like, you know, let everybody out there know what's going on, what decisions were made, and why. So it's a big thing. Who knows at this moment how big of a deal? Like, if I say we should do this, there's a good chance they just do not even listen at all.
But they did hear you.
But they did hear me. So yeah, we're
it's a start. Either way, we're interested to see where that's going. That's what today's episode is going to be about. Talking about a few things about Commander, what might need to get fixed, what should be fixed, and things that maybe Josh here will be bringing up with the Commander Advisory Committee.
Yeah, I think group. If I was out there, and I'm wondering this about the other members of the CAG also, is like, what is everybody's views? Since those people's views are going to be like one step removed from the Rules Committee,
right?
It's kind of, I think, important to know, well, what are they going to be representing? What are they going to be advocating for? And of course, this being our show, we can at least tell you what mine are. And
yes.
You know, honestly, Jimmy and I, we've been talking about Commander for
four years
now, an hour a week. You know, we've kind of codified our own philosophies and they're very similar. So,
which is why they only needed Josh and not me on this thing. You know what I mean? This boy busy. Where's the next movie at, yo? Just kidding. Anyway, as we go through the episode, start formulating in your head as well what you think you might bring up to the Commander Advisory Committee, the group, CAG, all that stuff. Before we get into it, though, the one thing I wanted to bring up is that I'm not on CAG, but I'm not hurt because I can still play Commander with the best of them by buying my cards from the best of them. That's right, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. You're going to buy cards anyway. Why not do it and do it in a way that supports the show? And hey, look, now there's a tangible reality to the impact this show has on our format. And you know, you guys being a part of that community and using this affiliate link helps us out in every way. This harbor is floating all the ships and it's raising them equally.
Yeah, and Ravnica Allegiance just came out. So if you want to get a hold of your Smothering Tithes for all of your white decks, or maybe just all of your decks, then cardkingdom.com/command zone. Also, when you pick up those cards, you probably want ways to protect them, deck boxes to put them in, play mats to play on. If you use Ultra Pro for all of that stuff, A, you'll be using the best of the best products that are out there to protect your cards and bling out your battlefield. But B, you'll also be supporting this show through supporting our sponsors. We really appreciate everybody that does that.
And the final way, and to me the most important way to get involved, in fact, part of this topic was inspired by the people in our Patreon. That's right, patreon.com/command zone. That's the way you can support the show in the most direct way. We do one thing where we call it a lucky patron every single week. And this week, that person is...
John Vogel. Thanks. John, you rock.
Yep. And by I said our Patreon participating in our Discord, Josh posted the question, what would you guys like to see addressed to the CAG? And it was great seeing everyone's responses. A lot of it lined up with what we had already been thinking, so that was cool.
It's nice to see a lot of perspectives, too, to take the temperature. And, you know, you read things and you're like, that's something people are worried about. It's good to know because every playgroup's different. And so I think that's another advantage of the Commander Advisory Group, which is that just access not only to us, but our communities.
Right.
And the Command Zone one is one of the best there is. Our patrons are sweet. Okay, we're going to go into the main topic. But before we do, if you weren't aware... The new Game Nights just came out last week.
Bingo.
It's been out for a couple of days now. If you haven't seen it, definitely should go check it out. It's a pretty great game. Also, at the end of it...
Paradox Engine, powerful.
The episode is Paradox Engine, good. And at the end of it, of course, we are giving away stuff. So you have 1 week from what would be last Friday to enter. So make sure you enter. Also, we've got something kind of cool going on for a future episode of Game Nights.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So right now, if you follow us on Twitter... We are putting out a poll. This is the first time we've ever done something like this. We've announced who the guests for that episode are going to be. It's going to be Kenji Numathanami Yagashira and Rachel Agnes, who is coincidentally also on the Commander Advisory Group.
Very cool.
It's funny because we booked her for this episode before we even knew that.
I was going to call insider trading, but yeah.
It's just a coincidence.
It was a coincidence.
But the cool thing is what we're doing is we're kind of theming the episode as like a Ravnica Guild showdown.
Showdown, yeah.
Yeah. Like which guild is the best? And you can go and follow the link through our Twitter and it takes you to a poll and you get to basically vote on which guild each of us should play.
Yeah, that's right. This is direct audience participation in the outcome of what's going to be on the final episode of Game Nights. You get to vote which guild do you think Josh should play, Kenji, Rachel, myself, and submit that vote. And also we're doing a prize giveaway associated with it, for which is some swag and stuff around the Ravnica theme stuff. If you enter your email as well before you vote, there's only one vote per household, but we've never done this before. You guys are going to get to choose what guild every single player on the show is going to play.
Yeah. Simic, that's for me.
I am Boros. Definitely giving you Rakdos again.
Boros for Jimmy. I
Do
only get one
not
vote.
Give me Boros. Oh, don't give me Boros, please.
But if you won, so much bragging rights.
How many Smothering Tithes can I put in my
also,
deck?
Also, if you... only one, sorry.
Oh, darn.
If you did win the game with Boros...
It would be a legendary moment.
First of all, I would never hear the end of it because I trash talk Boros so much. They'd be like, see,
I trash
awesome.
Talk Boros, yeah, too. True. We would both never hear the end
give
of it.
Give Kenji or Rachel Boros, please.
Yeah. Or no one.
I don't. Should we be even like trying to affect... Vote for whatever guild
yeah,
you think
yeah, vote for whatever. In fact, if awesomest. Anything, I just sealed my fate and made more people vote Boros. But honestly, there's 10 guilds and 4 players. So some guilds, wink, wink, are going to get left in the dust. You got it? Don't worry about it.
Okay. Let us go on to the main topic
hold on,
here.
Hold on, I need to type out the time code that this starts at because, and also include the note that you missed the part where you learned you can affect the outcome of game nights. Nights.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
So the goal today here is, and the goal I think for our show and for me as part of the Commander Advisory Group is always going to be as transparent as possible.
Yeah, full disclosure.
Yeah, so our dealings with the CAG and the Rules Committee are always going to be whatever I can talk about, I will let you guys know about. One of the requirements for me even joining the group when they asked me to was, listen, I can't do it if I'm not going to be able to still disagree with what you guys ultimately decide to do. Yeah. And if I can't talk about it on my show, because I'd much rather be able to comment on those things and still have our podcast be the same than be like restricted from doing that. And they were like, no.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was my only concern too, which is like, does this make you like a reporter for something? Like, do you have to hold yourself to different, like, no, this podcast remains the same.
Yeah. That was the first thing that I asked, and they cleared that up right away.
You're not a sellout.
In fact, being transparent was, like I said, one of the reasons they even chose certain people like me to be on the committee. They do want to be able to get the word out there about what they're doing, why, and what the process is.
Yeah, I think they recognize too, because Shivam's on here, that the podcast community is one that has a voice and obviously should have, you know, it's a large voice in terms of getting data. One of the things we always harped on the RC about was they didn't have enough data.
Right.
And going to two podcasts for two of the members here, I think, is the right way to go, at least.
Yeah, so let's just talk really quickly about the other members of the CAG. As you said, Shivam Butt, who is one of the co-hosts of the Commanderin podcast, along with Phil DeLuca, friend of the show.
He also provides a cultural perspective, as well, as they noted when they declared all the members.
Yep.
There's Stibbs, Staborski.
Yep, Adam Staborski is also... Yep.
Prior guest on the show.
Yep, been on our show, friend of ours, have played Commander with him a few times at GPs. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two that I personally know, that we personally know.
Same.
Now, Rachel Agnes is somebody that we've corresponded a little bit with and is going to be on Game Nights upcoming, obviously. But I don't actually know Rachel. Like, we haven't hung out or anything Mm-mm. before, so I've never met her in person, but have exchanged a number of emails. Ron Foster and Charlotte Sable are the last two members, and I don't know them at all.
Yep. Me neither.
Yeah, so.
But Sheldon does. And if you guys look at the announcement, he has a list of the things that they've done as well. So you can see where exactly they came from. And I'm sure a lot of you viewers and listeners out there recognize those names.
Yeah, so that's a good point. In the show notes for this episode, in the more info box below the video, we'll have a link to the article that Sheldon released that sort of explains exactly what the Commander Advisory Group is, who's on it, you know, who all the people that are on it sort of are, and how he knows them and why they were chosen. Let's see. I think all the members that I know, Stibbs, Shivam, are good choices. Rachel, I know, is kind of, she's written for Channel Fireball about Commander, and she writes a little bit about the competitive side of EDH sometimes, so she's involved in that aspect of it a little bit. So that's a perspective I think that is good.
We have published authors, published podcasters.
Yes. And one thing some people have been asking me is how well acquainted I am and we are with the people on the rules committee. So Sheldon was on our show once, a little bit contentious. It was right after the Tuck rule got changed.
Right, on my birthday.
Yep. And then at PAX last year, Jimmy and I were involved in an event that Sheldon was at.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to meet him, but we didn't actually play any games with him. Somebody that we've obviously corresponded with over Twitter and things. Gavin Dugan, who is another rules committee member, I've met once. He was at our commander party in 2017, the big one in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
He came up and introduced himself and was pretty wowed by the fact that we had like 600 Commander players in a room playing Commander.
You made this happen, Gavin.
Scott Larrabee, I also know. He works at Wizards of the Coast, and he's their representative on the Rules Committee.
On the WotC side, yep.
Yeah, and Scott was also at that event where we played with Sheldon. And then the last one is Toby Elliott, and I don't know Toby. I've never met Toby, so...
Yeah, and I would say my knowledge of these people is actually pretty limited. Honestly, I know the name Sheldon Menery. I've read articles. We've met him a couple of times. He's been on the show once, and then Scott as well. But the other two, I you know, outside of a passing, hey, how's it going? You don't really get to know someone that well at events and stuff. It's a bit tougher.
Yeah, Sheldon, of course, used to be a very high up judge. Had worked on a ton of pro tours.
That's right.
Yeah, kind of the godfather of the format. I like to say popularized Commander. Okay, so today we're going to discuss my current thinking on many of the most talked about possible changes, fixes that people want to see in the format. And that way you can get an idea of where my head's at when I might be advocating for or talking to the rules committee about. It'll also give you a chance, if you disagree, to, you know, tweet at us, email, comment, you know, with your own perspective, because that's really the thing I think is important, is just getting a lot of perspective from people out there. And if a lot of people are clamoring for something, there's a good chance that it's like, oh, maybe we need to look at it, or maybe I need to be pushing or advocating for it.
Yes, but please keep it civil.
Yes.
We're fighting for commander rules, not like human rights here, so.
Right. Right. And Jimmy and I do agree on a lot of things. In fact, a lot of my opinions are shaped by things we've talked about, so we have a lot of the same perspective, but Jimmy may play devil's advocate a little bit today, just to sort of...
The double-edged sword, Josh. I know your weaknesses.
It might give us a clearer idea on why you know, my opinion on certain things is the way that it is. So let's talk about the big one that I got. As soon as this was announced, a lot of people on Twitter were...
this is the one. This is the hill that you're going.
Yeah, jokingly, but maybe some of them weren't asking me about commander damage. So in the Commander Summit, I think a couple years ago, I had just sort of brought up as a topic, like...
don't need it.
How useful is commander damage to the format? You know, is it good? Is it bad? And I came down on the side of, like, I think commander damage is ultimately kind of like mana burn.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up very, very rarely in games. It's complicated.
Well, mana burn never comes up in games. Yeah. But
commander damage obviously comes up more than mana burn, but it's rare that it matters in a game.
I see.
It's complicated. A lot of people don't even understand that, A, it's only combat damage. Get this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That people think, like, Nekusar is going to kill you with 21 commander damage by, like, drawing 21 cards. No, it's only commander damage. Also, people don't understand that it doesn't stack. Like, if Jimmy attacks me with his commander, and then Mel attacks me with her commander, those commander damages are tracked separately. So Jimmy might have hit me for 2 and Mel for 4. Well, I don't have 6 commander damage. I have 2 from Jimmy's commander and 4 from Mel's.
A bit confusing. I agree there.
It also gets kind of a pain in the butt to track when you've got partner commanders and all kinds of things going on, and you got to keep your life total, maybe your poison amount, and then 2 or 3 different commanders. Also, there's weird things that can happen, whereas if I, like, steal Jimmy's commander and then hit Mel with it, then if Jimmy had previously hit Mel with that same commander before, then that will stack because the commander damage is actually tied to the physical card.
Yep.
So my point during the summit was commander damage is overly complex, and if I were redesigning the format, I would not include it.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hi, Josh, Command Zone Podcast here. Yeah. You've been on record for saying that you dislike this and you want it removed. Why are you trying to remove fun from a game? Why do you hate fun, Josh?
I'm not on record as saying I want it removed. So,
Josh, why do you want... You are now on record. You just said I want it removed in context to this statement. All right, I'm not going to play hardball, but I think the thing to the other point here would be, what's so hard about just clarifying how the rules work if people are confused about it?
Yeah, I mean, my point is, like, I wouldn't actually take commander damage away at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a talking point of, like, I don't like it, and I agree with all the things I said. I think those are all true. But the thing that overrides all of it is that, like, commander's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. There's a way that it's used to being played, and stuff has been designed with commander damage in mind. So the Voltron strategy, even though I still think, even with Voltron out there, very, very rarely does commander damage decide a game. I think a lot of times when you die to commander damage, you are also going to die to regular damage.
I see.
It's still entrenched enough in the format that I just don't actually think it's worth it to remove it. It will just cause too much upheaval. So I will not be advocating to the Rules Committee to get rid of commander damage.
Okay. So now that your stance has been set that you want to permanently get rid of commander damage.
Don't do that, because people will totally...
I know. Well, okay, so here's the thing. Because I think commander damage, in essence, is a more casual way of going about the format. Even just looking at it from, like, a holistic top-down perspective, it's like, oh, yeah, you want to hit big, smashy, hard with one creature enough to just really ice them out of the game. And I For me, when I came into the game, I think that was actually a fun flavor win for me. This is a game about your commander. And if anything, the decks that WotC's been releasing and the way that the mechanics have been working is that decks are really formulated to be built around your commanders.
Right.
So I think getting rid of commander damage is, of course, nothing that either of us want to have happen. But where do you propose we do fix the things to either make it more clear, or do you think it needs to be refined, or do you think we could even add in new rules so that instead of like, all right, if you do 50 damage with your commander total, then you can do something, you know, it's like, or do you want to keep it the way it is? 21, that's the sweet number.
A, I think keep it the way it is totally fine. But if I were going to make a change, I think the change that is the easiest and makes the most sense is to just remove all the complexity with keeping track of multiple commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it like poison damage. You can take 21 commander damage, but if Jimmy hits me for 2 and Mel hits me for 4, I have 6 commander damage.
I see.
And maybe that simplifies it to the point.
Maybe that number needs to increase then, because 21 from 3 different players means just 7 per, right? So
it's still, I bet it rarely happens, but yeah, sure, maybe it needs to increase. Already, though, it's like 21 is such a random number, and it's a lot. Like, it's only, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times it's like one big creature swings at you, but right, it hits you for 35. Like, you were going to die anyway. The damage, the 21 part doesn't matter that much.
True. I just think that that Voltron decks do have their upsides and downsides.
Yeah.
And it's very easy, I think, to stop a Voltron deck in a lot of different decks, especially Edicts and all that stuff. But I think that does provide a bit of a challenge, because I think the number one complaint that we do see is that games don't end fast enough. So if there was a way, and the way that you're proposing would definitely make it faster if it's just 21 cumulative, that potentially is something
that
we could
be interested
in. Does it
feel like Voltron decks or commander damage-based decks, ones that are trying to kill you by hitting you with their commander, are too strong now?
No, they've never been strong. Maybe they've never been strong enough.
Right, so the stacking the commander damage thing might just make them viable for real.
I think it would require probably pretty extensive testing to see, because I could see some games. I think the number one thing people want to avoid are feel bads.
Right.
And the only current feel bad that you seem to be pointing out here is that it's just hard to understand how commander damage works and how to track it in a lot of the edge case scenarios.
It's a pain in the butt.
And you're saying that commander damage already is enough of an edge case scenario, that it's an edge case scenario with its own edge case scenarios, and no one wants
that. The juice is just not worth the squeeze to me. But again, I want to be very clear. I don't even think I'm going to advocate for the stacking of commander damage. That's just the only change I could see that maybe makes sense. But for me,
right,
let's just leave commander damage as it is. It's entrenched in the format, and it's totally fine. Like, it's a little bit complicated. I don't love it, but at the same time, it's totally fine. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's not a hill that I'm willing to stand or die on.
All right, so let's find that hill. Shall we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, let's move on to the next topic.
All right, don't worry, I won't falsely accuse you of anything at this point.
Okay.
All right, Planeswalkers as commanders. So Brawl, as a lot of you know, is a 60-card format based on the standard rotation. They just made it open that every single Planeswalker that's released within standard can also be our commander for the Brawl format. This, however, has not made it into the full-on commander sets, except for in the product that they released where it specifically says that this card can be your commander.
Yeah, so like Aminatu, Saheeli,
right,
the most recent commander set.
Yep, as well as the original one with Teferi and all those guys.
The monocolored ones, yeah.
Monocolored ones, yeah. So the community, there seems like there's been a push just to, hey, why don't we make all Planeswalkers legal in commander? What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I'm on record as saying that I don't like this. I don't love Planeswalkers as commanders. The ones they have released, like this year and the previous years, anytime you play with those, it feels like they add to the game length for a number of reasons. Because A, Planeswalkers are kind of life gain spells, right? Because other players tend to attack them instead
right.
of the player, so they're not lowering life totals. They're attacking Planeswalkers. And then B, the Planeswalker itself is not a creature that can attack, so that's less damage just being done in a game.
Yeah, all that commander damage.
Yeah, not even that. Like, yeah, to go back to the commander damage thing, like, let's say I play Rune.
Mm-hmm.
Rune often chips in for 12, 16 damage in a game, right?
He's vigilant. He can attack pretty
right.
easily.
No, he's not doing it to one player necessarily. It's just like, oh, opportunity. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jimmy's open or he only has a 2-2. I hit him. Then a couple turns later, oh, something happened and now I can get in at Mel for a couple.
Right.
And that like lowers 16 points of damage in a game is a decent amount. It's going to change the amount of time that game takes, right?
Yep.
Whereas
you're right.
If there's a Planeswalker I'm playing with, A, I didn't do that 16 points of damage, and B, I probably didn't take the damage because I had to attack Mel's Planeswalker or I had to attack Jimmy's Planeswalker. And so, like, it compounds in two different directions. So to me, that creates an average game length that is longer by a significant amount. I don't think it's like a minute or two. I think we're adding, you know, 5-6 minutes maybe per planeswalker. That's a lot.
My question to you then is, there historically haven't really been that many planeswalkers that have been released that are actual viable commanders.
Right.
If that makes sense. My question to you here then is, do you think it's really going to make more players unhappy than it will make new players that want to build around these cards happier? Like the overall happy quotient with Magic, with Commander specifically, like, do you think it's actually better to not have this happen because of the potential? And again, this is untested data, right? We don't know exactly how long it makes games, but the potential of making certain games longer, because it's not like you're only having Planeswalkers as commanders here, right?
Right, right.
Is that better than just denying people the ability to brew around these cards?
Well, A, I would say you would have a ton of Planeswalkers as commanders at first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As soon as they make that legal, you're looking at 6 months of like half of your games are going to be half Planeswalkers probably, because people are going to be like,
sweet. Least, I think at least one is more reasonable, because I think a lot of people still love their cards. And that's my other thing about this is, I don't think there are that many Planeswalkers that are that exciting and fun to build around outside of more of like a, hey, this is cool, I can finally do this, so I'm going to.
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to try it. I mean, if you looked at, say, how many games right now you're playing that feature a legendary creature that was printed in the last year,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be high. It's right. probably half of the commanders in all your games. That's the way people operate. New stuff comes out, they build the thing. You know, you see a ton of Lord Windgraces and Nicol Bolas's and the new stuff, and then you see some of the older stuff sprinkled in. Well, as soon as you do that, the Planeswalkers become the new stuff. You're going to see a ton for a little bit, I think. Listen, the slow game thing, that's like one reason against it. Mm-hmm. The biggest reason against it, I actually think, is just that the commander format's in a really good place. It's the most popular format. When we started our podcast, Jimmy, it was like a niche thing. There was no other podcast we could find even talking about it. How many podcasts about Commander are there now?
8, 9, 10?
Like, there's
shows? There's so many.
How many YouTube channels about Commander are there?
Oh, plenty.
Yeah, there was zero when we started. And so the growth of the format is so big. And so to me, that's the biggest thing. And to go back to our song at the beginning of the episode is,
don't rock the boat.
Yeah, why do we want to risk it? Like, you might be right. There might only be a couple of Planeswalkers that are like really viable as strong decks, but we don't know. And why? Why, when you're so far ahead in the game, do you not just like keep playing the way that got you there?
My argument with that would be, I don't think it really is going to destabilize the format in a significant way. Now, some of the other things we're going to talk about would potentially destabilize the format. I think this is just one of those things that seems harmless enough on the surface that I think deserves at least some small period of time or active testing by someone in the CAG to see, hey, exactly, you know, is this good or not? But more importantly, the question here to me is, are there going to be more people? I can see this being something that younger fans really appreciate, being like, cool, I can play my Planeswalker in Commander. And if Brawl is sort of like the way to take someone from standard commander to regular commander, it does kind of feel bad that the Planeswalkers that you built around in Brawl can't be used for Commander there.
Yeah.
So something in me says that the actual hurt of the format is people that may have wanted to build around something and learning, oh, darn, I can't. But I don't know how big that number is as opposed to what the potential risk of, quote unquote, destabilizing things is either.
I mean, to address the Brawl thing, I don't like that argument at all, because I don't think Brawl should be dictating to Commander anything.
Oh, I don't think it's dictating. I think you're just potentially losing players that might be like, oh, cool, I want to build a Commander deck, but I can't actually use this Planeswalker as my Commander anymore. Why? Why can't I?
But that's a choice that Brawl made that forces something into Commander, saying like, oh, so we should do this thing now because Brawl did it?
I mean, I think if anything, Brawl showed that it's not something that's disastrous.
Brawl also showed that it's not something that's popular because nobody plays Brawl.
Yeah, but regardless, I think if there was a lesson, because if you're looking at case studies, right, if you're going to try and study anything, you have a perfect case study there where you can at least look and see what happens.
But all the games of Brawl we played, which granted, I probably played a dozen, maybe 7 games of Brawl, they're long because of the Planeswalkers and because the power level.
I think they're long because the power level wasn't high enough.
Well, I think the Planeswalkers compounds that though. So
sure.
There's nothing about having Planeswalkers as commanders in Brawl that I thought, boy, I really want to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, did it up the fun quotient?
I would say for the people building the decks, it might. But that's the thing, is that it's a very subjective thing overall. Because me personally, I don't have very much interest in playing these Planeswalkers, but I know a lot of people that do, and for a lot of people, that's fun for them as for in terms of flavor. It's fun for them in terms of playing their favorite characters and all that stuff. So I can see why people would want it. I'm just wondering if the actual impact of it happening is as significant as you're placing it to be, which I don't actually think it is.
Yeah, I just don't see very much upside. I've never... And listen... People out there could have tried it and been like, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But every time that Planeswalkers get thrown in the mix, and we've seen enough of it with the monocolored Planeswalkers, the new ones this year, Brawl.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I've never played in games where commanders are the command, or sorry, where Planeswalkers are the commanders, right? I've experienced it. And every time I've been like, yeah, I don't think it's good. I don't like it. It doesn't add to the fun quotient. If it did, I might be more in favor of it. But for me, there's not really a big upside. I think people think they want it. People think like, oh, it'd be awesome. I'll have, but I don't, it's like, as the, I'm not on the rules committee, but as, you know, people in charge of the format, what people think they want, you have to kind of predict what will actually be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it actually will. I mean, a 6-year-old thinks they want to eat cotton candy for dinner every night, but you know they shouldn't, right?
Is that the main thing that you think takes away from the fun then? It's just a longer game?
No,
and
I also.
And the fact that they can't chip in for damage kind of thing?
No. I think that's a big potential downside. Like it, mm-hmm. I think that's an actual downside. Then you compound that with the potential downside of that's a lot of new cards coming into the format all at once. We don't know what that'll do. Like there could be some really broken ones. Like the worst thing ever would be like they do this and then they have to ban like 3 or 4 of them.
Well, then why not ban them before you? Because
you don't know.
Well. Isn't that part of what the advisory committee and all you guys are supposed to be doing here? Which is like, yes, if you were to do this, here's
who I don't think there's any way to predict it, right? That's be like looking at the set review or the card image gallery for Ravnica Allegiance and being like, we should ban these 4 cards. Now I can say Vanifar looks very powerful, Smothering Tithe very powerful, but would you want the rules committee going like, before the cards even come out, Vanifar is banned?
I think it would be easy to do for Planeswalkers looking in retrospect and then letting any new Planeswalker come in, let it be legal and then addressing them on the one, because again, out of the current like realm of Planeswalkers, maybe 1 or 2 would be worthy of looking at, like, should they allow this to actually be played as a command?
And that's my thing, is like, you're doing the thing where you're predicting rather than waiting to see what happened. And right. I'd rather wait to see what happened.
But I'm interested to see how many times the rules committee has not needed to wait to see what happens. Like when the game first started, was there a small ban list?
I have no idea about that, honestly. No.
That's something I'd be interested to see.
I mean, they've
been
playing for years unofficially. So
that's the thing. I think it's just pretty obvious if something's going to be actually busted out the gate in terms of a commander.
I don't think so. It took Prophet of Krufix like 1.5 years. Paradox Engine is still legal.
All knew Prophet of Krufix needed to go.
Leovold was there for a while. There's been cards that got banned like years after. So they had to see it for a while to decide that it was banned. Not that I agree with the entire ban list, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I don't think that it would be good at all to like just look at a list, never see the cards as commanders played, and just be like, I think these 3 should be banned. I would much rather be like, let's see what happens.
Okay, so you do want to have the Planeswalker.
See, you're doing the thing.
Okay, excellent.
You're doing the thing.
Excellent, excellent. Moving on. No, okay. So what's your final stance on Planeswalkers as commanders?
I'm just not in favor of it. I just don't think there's enough upside to make it worth it. I'm not saying that there wouldn't be some people that are happy with it, but I think in general, mm-hmm. it's just the juice is not worth the squeeze. It's a big risk for little upside. And I the potential downside mixed with the actual, we know there will be a long lengthening of games.
Okay.
It's just, no.
All right. I would say for the final devil's advocate that there is not enough proof that it actually would lengthen a significant number of games to decrease overall happiness with the format.
Well, give me the argument for it shortens games.
Oh, it doesn't shorten games,
okay,
I don't think.
So.
Well, it doesn't necessarily, but that's what I'm saying is a long game the worst part about this game?
You just said in the previous section about commander damage that one of the benefits of it was that it shortens games.
It does help.
And the biggest...
You know I have to play Devil's Advocate differently for all of these, right? I can't just be the same person across all of them. It's impossible. I agree with too much of your stuff. I can't be like, ugh. It's a very hard position to take right now, the Devil's Advocate stuff.
Fair enough.
I think there should be ways to end games quickly.
Right.
If you have a Planeswalker as your commander, that doesn't mean you don't have some 2-card combo in there that will end the game on the spot.
Right. All the green ones have doubling season. Another reason why
I
wouldn't want to do
it. Well, that is something that is an actual argument I think that we should have to talk about.
Chain Veil 2. And that goes in all of them.
Yeah. So if you make all Planeswalkers legal, does that mean you need to ban cards like Chain Veil and Doubling Season?
Yeah, and say, I don't know, but maybe, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. I mean, because you do have Parallel Lives and a bunch of other ways to still do the effect without making Planeswalkers broken.
Okay, fair enough. So I'm arguing against a different person each time. I will keep that in mind.
Pretty much. I mean, it's impossible, man. Yeah, this is so
true.
Hard.
That's true. Okay.
I have to think of like new stuff for each one.
You did a good job.
I'm exhausted over here.
All right, let's move on to the next section.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Oh, God, we have like six left. All right, I'll go a little less hard. All right, off-color fetch lands. This is something that Jimmy loves. And I think y'all should love too.
Do you want to explain it? Because I think people don't know what that means.
So let's say you're playing a blue and black deck, and you have islands in there and swamps as well. And you'd say, oh, you know what? I want to fetch out this island. I need to use a fetch land. And the fetch land looks for a land type usually. But you want to use one like Fled Strand that looks for islands and plains. But your deck isn't playing plains, but the island part of the fetch land can still find it for you. So this is something that is currently legal in Commander because there is no mana symbols on the cards, but this is something that the Rules Committee has talked about in the past wanting to quote-unquote fix, which is can you use these off-color fetch lands in a deck that doesn't play all the colors that the land itself can fetch?
Yeah, they basically have said that they don't feel that that's in the spirit of the format, right? Because a fetch land, although it does not have the mana symbol on it, if it only fetches a island and a plains, it doesn't feel like it should belong in, you know, like a Dimir deck,
mm-hmm.
because that doesn't have white in it. And so, but right now, because like you said, color identity is tied to the mana symbol, not the word plains or the word mm-hmm. island, you can.
Notably, it's the fetch land that gets around this restriction because the actual lands that will tap for two colors, those you cannot have in the deck that doesn't play those colors.
Right.
Unless it's like a mana confluence, which just says tap for one mana of any color.
Right. Yeah, you can't have a Tundra in a deck that's Dimir because it does have the white symbol on it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is something that I'm actually not with the Rules Committee here and might even desire to get rid of off-color fetches.
And why is that, Josh?
I've
decided this person's a little more competitive.
Yeah, this person is like...
Don't tell me why, Josh. I want to know.
This person started out agitated.
Not a good starting place, by the way, if you ever need a debate with someone.
I just think that in general, and this kind of is similar to the commander damage thing of like simplicity of rules is mm-hmm. good. Being as close to the rules of other formats in general as possible is good so that somebody, if they play modern, can come over and play commander with, you know, obviously you got to know some things.
Right.
But, and that was something we didn't talk about in commander damage, which I also think is a downside. But in general, like stuff's going to work the same. Once you know, oh, my deck has a commander and it has to be the colors of the commander, you know, it's not like, because it's hard to explain. You can't use
a fetch land that doesn't have the name of a color that your commander is in.
Right, exactly. It's not like it says go fetch a white land or a black land. It says the name of a land, right?
Plains or swamp.
So I get why they kind of want to, for the spirit of the format, quote unquote. But for me, I'm going to say this phrase probably a lot. It's not like the other side of the arguments has no merit. I think they all do. People mm-hmm. who like commander damage totally get it.
You're completely underwriting my entire role. But keep going. This is great.
I'm just saying it's about the juice being worth the squeeze.
Right.
To me, the upside and the downside is weighing. It's not like there's only upside on one and there's only downside on the other. There is some upside to getting rid of off-color fetches in that the spirit of, hey, I can only use cards in my deck that are of the colors of the commander, the Vorthosy side of that works. But to me, the downside is too big. It's just too different than the other formats.
Now, my question to you is, what do you think is the spirit of the format, if this is what we think the Rules Committee was sort of hearkening towards?
Yeah, that's a good point, and it's different for everybody. And that's another reason that, you know, I wouldn't want to change it, because I don't want to tell somebody who doesn't even think that's the spirit of the format that,
right,
you know.
Because someone might say using every card at your disposal was why Commander was invented, because you could go through all your old cards and, oh, cool, I can use this fetch land in this deck. It's the only fetch land I actually own. But thank goodness I can use it in this deck because it hasn't been ruled against, said that person that I may or may not agree with. No. And other people may just want to be completely like, you can only do color-based things. So I guess, do you want to ever be in a position where you have to police that part of the, or have any insight on what that means? Because in a lot of ways, you saying later on, like, I want cards unbanned, is in a way affecting the quote-unquote spirit of the game. Because those cards may do certain things that either contribute more to games being won in what some people may see as a way that is against the spirit of the game.
Sure, and spirit of the format is something that's going to be impossible to nail down because every person is going to be different. And I get that. And I try to make allowances for it when necessary, too. Like, not take it as, like, my perspective on what the format is mm-hmm. what it is. Like, I'm constantly talking about CEDH and those people and trying to get rid of the negative rhetoric that a lot of people have about them. They're not playing the format wrong. They're playing it how they like to play it. The mm-hmm. only thing that's wrong is when I'm playing with them and they don't let me know, or vice versa, and then we're not on the same wavelength. But as long as everybody knows what everybody's trying to do, then we can at least avoid each other and play in our own little groups, or say, oh, I know in this game you're going to try and combo out on turn
right.
four. If as long as I know that from the start, I'm not going to be mad when it happens, right? This is kind of the thing about spirit of the format, too. I don't want to dictate to people what the spirit of the format is. I just think, if in doubt, let's try and keep the rules as close to the regular rules of
magic
as possible, just for simplicity's sake. And I do like what you said, or what the person that you were talking about said, which is...
Yeah, that guy.
That person, whoever it was...
A shade of my former self.
That said, you know, Commander is about being able to play with the cards you own. And I think that's one of the biggest things about the format, is if you have a card and you loved it from the past and were nostalgic about it, have a memory of mm-hmm. a tournament you were in with it or whatever, for the most part, you should be able to play it in our format. That's what casuals like, playing their cards. I open up a box, there's a card in there, I can play it.
There you go. So are you saying that if they decided to fix the off-color fetch land thing, it's actually making the game less casual in a lot of ways, because now you have to abide by a different world of rules?
Maybe it is. You know, there's the argument of cost too, right? Fetch lands are expensive.
Well, that's why the other guy was like, goodness, I only own one, thank goodness I can play it in this deck, otherwise that would suck.
Yeah, but I don't think banning cards based on the cost of the card is necessarily the greatest way to go either. So I don't know the answer to that part of the question.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't know that factors in exactly for me.
Who knows? But again, so your final stance on this is, don't change it or don't fix it if it ain't broke, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think let's just keep that as is.
All right, moving on now. Hybrid mana. This is an interesting one. So on some cards, you'll see a mana sign that's cut in half and it has two different colors on it. If it was a Simic one, it would have the green and the blue, which means when you're paying the cost for the spell, you can either pay a green mana or a blue mana. You don't need to pay double. You just can choose which one to pay. So if it had two hybrid mana symbols, you could do green-green, green-blue, or blue-blue. Make sense? Now, in the two Ravnica sets that have just come out, there is a bunch of cards with hybrid mana on them because of all the guilds. And people have been asking, hey, you know, because you can choose to play this spell as two green-green, why can't I put it in a deck that is mono-green and doesn't have blue in it? Or because I can do two blue-blue, why can't I play this in my mono-blue deck? Right now, it's clarified as being both colors, so you can only play it in decks that have both those colors in it. What do you think, Josh?
You know, I think a lot of this contention comes from the fact that Wizards, Magic R&D, Mark Rosewater have said that the intention of hybrid mana was to be either or.
Mm-hmm.
But the Commander's Rules Committee came out and said that for color identity purposes, it's not either or, it's both. And people really want to play some of these cards in decks that don't include both of the colors but only have one of them. I understand that. And this is, I think, one of the most brought up things when I pulled our Discord mm-hmm. and people on Twitter about, like, hey, what are the big, you know, controversial or contentious changes or fixes, you know, you think Commander needs? A lot of people were like, I wish I could use hybrid mana cards. Yeah.
Mm.
I think that right now the card pool is large enough that the restriction is actually good. It breeds creativity. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need more cards that potentially could go in every deck or every deck that has blue or whatever. And I think I like the fact that there's some really awesome cards that I wish I could play in decks, but I can't. I need both colors. And I actually think that's cool. And I like that as sort of a, these cards, you know, if I'm playing these two colors, that's one of the bonuses I get. And I guess this one I don't have a super hard stance, though. I can see the argument for the other side, and I totally get it. Like, there's probably a bunch of awesome stuff you could do if you can just take, I don't know, what, off the top of my head, I can't think of one, mm-hmm. like Debtor's Knell or something like that,
right.
and put it only in mono black. You know, that might be awesome. Immortal Servitude's one that I play in a black-white that shell that I know a lot of Shadowborn Apostles with Shirei as the commander would want to put in, but they can't because they don't have white. Like I do with Athreos, and I get that. But for me, I think that the current rule is fine. And again, I'm not sure the juice is worth the squeeze, although this one's closer.
Yeah, I would say earlier, you know, you were like, we want to keep this as close to the real rules of Magic as possible. Right. And this hybrid mana thing is something that the rules committee created that's taking us further from it.
I don't know that that's true, though, because color identity itself in Commander is a new rule.
Mm-hmm.
Regular Magic doesn't have color identity.
But if the original creators were intending to be either or with these, then is it sort of like, well, look, if it was supposed to be a strictly green-blue card, then it would have been green and blue, not two hybrid mana symbols of Simic.
Right, but then think about like Devoid cards.
Mm-hmm.
The original creators were trying to make it so that, like, yeah, it costs green, but that's a colorless card. But mm-hmm. for the purpose of Commander, that doesn't really work because...
it's still a green card.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I think color identity wasn't something that was ever invented by Wizards and was totally invented because they never foresaw a format where like you would restrict mm-hmm. the color of the cards in it based on the card that's in a command zone, right? So I think that rule is going to be something that people are going to have to wrap their head around when they enter the format no matter what. And so hybrid mana, well, I mean, it's a good point. It might be a little bit counterintuitive.
Here's the question I have now. Because I think it's pretty obvious that if this was to be made legal, that you could use these hybrid mana costs in monocolor decks and just decks that didn't have that color, the other color of the hybrid mana cost, some monocolor decks would really actually benefit from it. White and red would have access to tools that they normally don't in their color pie.
Right, because an Azorius hybrid would have some blue, maybe some card draw in it. Yeah, no?
And in a way, that is breaking the color pie because you're playing a card that shouldn't necessarily be played by that world, if that makes sense.
Does that break the spirit of the format?
But does it make it better because it makes the monocolor decks versus the fact that when you do this, you open up some combo potentials as well that could result in a... that's sort of like entering into an experimental frenzy there because you don't exactly know. That's right. This is a big pile of cards that would be entering. Now, is that potential downside of, oh, something may break...
It's similar to the Planeswalker thing, maybe?
It's similar, but in this case, it's actually more cards entering the format, so it's more possible ways to break stuff because now you can put the two, you know, one of these hybrid cards in a different deck that could use that effect to really combo off with something, and then all of a sudden now you're playing with these new card bases in here that originally weren't meant to be with these potentially already self-balanced colors.
Right.
So is the upside of like, hey, we're going to really help out some monocolors potentially better than the downside of the, oh my gosh.
Of rocking the boat?
Who knows? This boat could get really rocked by this.
It could get tipped over, you would say?
Yeah.
See, I think the Planeswalker is a bigger problem because they're commanders.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will get played every game. Multiple times sometimes, whereas these will have to go in the 99. They're gonna not have as big an impact naturally by being one of 99 cards, but right. at the same time I agree that there is danger there. And yeah, I guess this is one where I could maybe possibly be swayed, but right now I'm still of the let's not make any sweeping changes because the format is very popular, has rocketed to the top of popularity in recent years, and why under those circumstances are you going to make huge sweeping changes when it's like you're already winning? Just keep doing what you were doing.
It's true. We should clarify, by the way, that of all the things we've talked about, really it's only off-color fetches that the Rules Committee has even let people know that they're really discussing internally. So this other stuff is mostly community brought up, and what we've found is the general tension.
I mean, Sheldon's on record as saying that he is not in favor of Planeswalkers as commanders.
Right.
And the Rules Committee has been asked many times about the hybrid mana, and they've stuck to their guns as far as their previous ruling. So yep. they have talked about these things before.
Yep, and potentially are still talking about them, or they've already made up their mind. Who knows? But let's keep moving on.
Feels like they've already made up their mind about hybrid mana.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think it's changing anytime soon. No. From a Jimmy perspective, it would make things, it would really rock the boat. This may rock the boat even further, however. The Unstable Legends. A lot of people want to make these silver-bordered commanders legal in the format, but Josh Lee Kwai, do you think that is a good idea or a bad idea as an official representative of the Rules Committee?
I'm not an official representative of the Rules Committee. I'm an advisor. I agree with the people in that I wish that we could have the Unstable Legends, minus Spike.
Minus Spike.
And only the ones from Unstable.
Okay.
As legal in Commander. That's something I can actually get behind, and the problem is how do you elegantly create a rule that allows it? It's difficult to, because the last thing I would want to do is like create a legal list,
right?
You know,
another list, as you always say, yeah, on like top of the other ones.
The ban list is already a pain in the butt to remember everything, right. And to create a second list now that you have to remember, like these are the inverse of banned. What's the opposite of banned?
Allowed.
The allowed list.
You may also play these cards as your commander, and it lists off Baron von Count and all the other guys.
It would be sweet because they are cool, and I'm sad that we don't get to see them. Here's what should happen. Wizards should just release them as black bordered somewhere, somehow, to make them legal. Just the legendary creatures, again, minus Spike, if Wizards really wanted to. And then you could play the silver bordered ones. Because they would have been black bordered at some point, right?
Yeah, and you can have a foil version of them too that way.
Yeah, so
okay.
That's...
Okay.
What if Wizards... And again, the Rules Committee is not Wizards. I guess we didn't talk about that at the beginning. And
well, the only person that they have is Scott Larrabee. And right. He's sort of their more like... Their liaison.
I'm just saying, I think it's possible the audience doesn't understand how Commander works because there's right. probably some people out there that think Wizards runs
Commander. Yeah,
the Commander format. Yeah, Wizards doesn't. They run Modern. They run Standard. If a card gets banned, that's people at Wizards of the Coast. Mm-hmm. That's their job. And they go, well, let's get rid of these cards and ban them. Commander was created and is run by civilians, by people that are outside of Wizards. Now, Wizards has one person, Scott Larrabee, like you said, on the Rules Committee, but he's one of four voices. And the other ones have been Magic judges and involved with Wizards, but they don't work directly for Wizards. Mm-hmm. And so this is a really unique format in that it's so popular, but it's not actually run by Wizards. So Wizards designs cards for a format they're not in
charge of. This is where most of the pains come from, too, which is like, we don't really know how it all works.
Yeah, maybe we will know more soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I need you to be my inside man, Josh.
Yeah.
So, take it down from the inside.
Why take it down? No.
Huh?
No.
I'm sorry, I blacked out. What happened? That was my sleeper cell persona there.
So, but also the Rules Committee doesn't have the ability to do what I said, right? Which is like,
hey, print these cards, yeah.
Yeah, they can't go to Wizard and be like, print this. And so I'm with everybody. I wish those Unstable Legends could be played, but I'm not sure there's a great way to implement that desire.
There is no good way to implement this desire, Josh.
Okay.
It's called Unstable for a reason. And we don't want to rock this boat. We've already talked about it. Unstable, it's literally in the name. No, thank you. Moving on.
This boat would be unstable.
Exactly. That's the last thing we need. The format is at an all-time high in terms of how great it is. Jimmy agrees with Josh here. They would be sweet, right? I've seen them all. I don't think any of them inherently are breaking the format. But at the same time, it's a very tricky wicket.
Yeah. If they could release them black bordered just one time somehow, that would make the silver bordered ones legal.
I wonder even if they could even throw them into like an MTGO-esque thing. You know, because they'll occasionally give cards away in like their little treasure chests and stuff.
That's interesting. Would that then make them legal? I don't think it would affect the paper world, though. I don't think the Rules Committee would allow that.
Who knows?
Because it might change something else somewhere. You know, I don't know. Anyway. Okay.
Okay, now we are going to talk about competitive EDH, also known as CEDH. And there is a lot of, I think, dissent. This is kind of like a contentious part of the EDH community, is that there is the competitive groups, and there's sort of a bit of negative talk from both sides.
I mean, I think there's more negative talk from the casuals towards the competitive than vice versa, which is not how you think it would be, but...
Yeah, but maybe it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's probably exacerbated by the fact that doing that does not elicit a necessarily great positive response as well, right? If someone, you hear someone down-talking you, you're going to jump to the defensive, and then things all of a sudden are going to escalate, even if they didn't need to get there in the first place.
Right, right. That's a good point.
You want to take this? I don't really know too much about this outside of, I guess it's true though, competitive EDH is not really represented or spoken for by the rules committee. What do you think should happen, if anything?
So one of the big things, again, when this announcement was made, is a lot of people who are interested in competitive EDH saw me, and I think Rachel, who has written about competitive EDH before, as sort of their great hope of like finally having a voice. And they're using me.
They would be sorely disappointed.
Well, it's funny. It shows how desperate they are that they're pointing at me because I'm not a competitive EDH player.
Right.
I've said it many times. But at the same time, I'm...
You're the spikier side of things.
Well, I'm receptive. Right? I will talk. I will just mention CEDH even though I don't play it. I don't know all those decks. I've read about it for episodes and things like that. And I've talked to people who do play competitive EDH. So I have like the vaguest idea of what's going on with it. But at the same time, I'm on record just being... what's the word? Sympathetic to the fact that that's the way they like to play and they should like to play it that way, and that's totally fine.
I'm with you.
And so they're like that desperate that they're like, Josh, he's going to be our guy that's going to stick up for us in the rules committee, which I will try to at least bring up that perspective, but I also don't think that competitive EDH can or should govern how EDH as a whole is run, because a lot of what I heard, and this is a big alarm bells are ringing moment from the competitive people when they came to me when they heard about this, was all the cards they want to have banned. If you got a long list of cards that you want to have banned, you're talking to the wrong person, and I think you're in the wrong format. Not that you shouldn't play Commander, but Commander's just never going to be a format where they ban 100 cards.
Right.
Because Commander can't be balanced in that way, but the competitive people want it to be tournament balanced.
Right. Well, the competitive people are seeing it from, we have now made the top tier decks. We understand what the quote-unquote competitive meta is.
What the problem cards are.
What the problem cards are. And in order to make this a better balanced meta for us, this is what we need to do. I think, and now I'm just out of the devil's advocate role here, you should probably just break off into your own format that takes some, most of its cues from EDH. But if you need to govern it in such a harsh way that's only affecting, I don't know, 5% of the player base, 10, I don't even know what the percentage is.
We're just making up numbers, but
it's hard
small.
For you to take that 5% over the 95 and say these cards need to get banned because we're specifically in a play group that knows how to abuse them in a way that's making it unfun for our specifically strictly competitive format of playing this.
I believe that following a line where we ban a bunch of cards for balance reasons like that actually hurts Commander to the point where it's no longer as popular as it is.
Right. I mean, they already have dual Commander. There's already these things like Canadian Highlander, like other
French
singleton
1v1
formats,
Commander.
French 1v1, yeah, that have their ban lists that are separate from the regular ban list. So, interesting.
But I do think that competitive people have a perspective that is useful and should be at least considered and taken into account. So,
I do too. I think that's the thing that I would encourage you to go after most, which is like, what do you think competitive play brings to EDH in a way that should enlighten or at least throw some light on the rest of this mass of what is Commander and how do we make it the best?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a question we should be asking.
Yeah, so all you see EDH people out there, I am willing to hear your perspective and I've heard from a bunch of you already, but specifically like banning a bunch of cards, not something I'm ever going to advocate for. Maybe there are other changes, though, that I would listen to. Maybe, you know, like I said, the hybrid mana thing is a thing where I'm lukewarm about my own position on it. Like, I do feel like it should stay as it is, but I don't feel like that's not a hill I'm willing to die on.
I would, you know, the thing that's valuable for me from CEDH is the way that group plays can be considered the most unfun way to play many other people. But they have fun doing it. So the question is there any insight that they can shed in terms of like why it is fun for them, but also why they understand why it's not fun for other people? And if there's a balance between the two that can lend some of that, or is it strictly just a competitive nature thing that makes them enjoy CEDH that much more than regular EDH? And is that something that's just not bred into your, like, let's just take your average Commander player. Do they have that? Do they need to have that to have more fun? Or is it actually better that they don't have that in them?
All right. Well, hard question to answer. I'd love to hear everybody's perspective.
All right.
All right. Well, ooh. Speaking of banning a bunch of cards.
This is your favorite subject. Now, everyone wants to know, Josh, what cards, if you could, if you wanted to, would you recommend being banned in the format?
Yeah, this is the number one question I got.
Should we ban Cyclonic Rift, Josh? Can you tell them to ban Cyclonic Rift, please? How about Deadeye? Deadeye Navigator wins so many games. Oh, Paradox Engine. It's Paradox Engine good. Soul Ring, Mana Crypt. I can't afford a Mana Crypt. Those guys with Mana Crypt, it's so stupid. That book promo, whatever, like, it's still dumb. They have so much mana, and then the damage is inconsequential because they have 40 life, so what's the point? And then you're just ramping up bigger spells, and they're just killing me with it. That's not cool.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of banning anything if possible. I'm not saying there would never be a card that I think, hey, that should be banned. But in general, I won't be advocating for bans.
But Josh, it ruins the format. How many games? You say you didn't want games to go long, right?
Right.
Cyclonic Rift, probably the greatest go longer game card in the format.
I disagree. I think it ends a lot of games.
I've seen it make a game go on for 2 hours longer because everyone could reset and the person couldn't capitalize on it. I know not everyone's you, Josh. When they cast that big spell, they're going to win off it. A lot of people just do it because they have to save their own lives, and then they're at a disadvantage position, and then the game just takes even longer.
Okay. But I mean, you can at least make arguments of the games where people Cyclonic Rift on the end step before their turn and then win, and so those probably balance out at the very least in my estimation.
Based on my personal experience, I don't see this to be the case. I see that Cyclonic Rift is often used as a protection spell, if anything, to be
I
like,
think it can be. That's why it's so good.
I gotta do it.
But a lot of times it's just like, nope, I'm just gonna use it to bounce everything so only I have stuff and nobody else does.
I see.
Deadeye, I don't see as a huge problem anymore. It's good. It's really good. Don't get me wrong. It's super powerful, but you have to combo it with something.
Okay, what about zero mana rocks or like the Grim Monolith? They're so expensive. They make things so explosive, and sure, you can have artifact removal, but if you just have these cards in the format, sometimes it just leads to these awful feel bads where I can't do anything versus a deck that ramps.
Green land-based ramp, I think, is more powerful than that stuff most of the time.
Yeah, and but when it comes to comboing off, green land-based ramp holds nothing to
true,
your Grim
true,
Monolith
true.
Untapping it.
Competitive EDH players play a lot more Grim Monoliths probably than they play Skyshroud
right?
Claims or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but also, I don't think there's a good realistic way to just ban all that stuff, right? Like, how does that work? Do you go Soul Ring, Mana Crypt, Mana Vault? Like, how do you, where do you stop? And mm-hmm. how do, like, really? We're going to just ban like 10 cards at once?
What about cards like Craterhoof Behemoth? Things that just win the game no matter what?
I mean, Craterhoof has to be set up, so I don't even think that's even close to
on the list. How about Expropriate, Josh? That you said you've never seen that card lose a game.
Oh, well, one time now I lost with it when I cast it, so I'm no longer undefeated at having cast it. I'm like 12-1, but...
That's got to be overpowered. Surely
just,
that should be
recommended.
That's just
me. I don't think I've actually seen anybody else lose when they've cast it either. when they've cast it either. Well, Expropriate specifically, here's the thing. I think if the format tries to say we can't allow any spells that cost 8, 9, 10 mana and then win the game, then that list of cards, Tooth and Nails and Omnisciences and things like that, is too big. And so, you know, Expropriate's not that different than Tooth and Nail. If you want to, Tooth and mm-hmm. Nail will win you the game when you cast it. And so I think that we just have to say there are going to be some spells that cost 8, 9, 10 mana and they're going to have a very high chance to win the game when they're played. And that's okay. And if people want to play those, we got to let them because we can't ban 20 cards.
So you're saying there is not a single card right now that you would recommend be banned from the format?
No.
All right. Moving on.
So, yeah, I would much rather unban things than ban things.
Right. Unbans.
Yes.
So what would you unban if you had the choice, Josh?
Okay. So I'm not saying I would unban all of these, but these are the ones I think are in contention to be unbanned. Biorhythm. That one I actually think I would unban.
We have it on a stick already.
And it fits the criteria I just stated, which are 8, 9, 10 mana spell that can win the game. Biorhythm won't always win the game. It requires some setup. But can it? Yeah. But I think we just have to be okay with spells that cost that amount that can win the game sometimes. We already have them. Expropriate is already...
Right.
Actually, I think Expropriate's better than Biorhythm. You don't have to set it up. You just cast it and you will win most of the time. Biorhythm, you probably have to do some stuff to win right then with it.
Right.
Reoccurring Nightmare, I think, is a possibility. Coalition Victory. Painter's Servant.
Oh, please.
World Fire, Sway the Stars. Maybe Panoptic Mirror. Those are the ones that come to mind right away as ones I would take a look at and think about unbanning. Right. Probably wouldn't unban all of them, but I think a couple of those could come off. And getting a lean and mean ban list that has less things on it, I think it'd be good. And maybe it would open up, you know, future bannings, even though I don't really want to do that. But there are cards that are way worse than all the cards I just named.
Well, I would say, remember when Braids was banned and Kokusho was banned?
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like these bans may have been made at a time when things were a little less refined.
Kokusho was banned at some point. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
That's crazy. That card is nowhere near powerful enough to be banned.
No.
Yeah.
But the effect, I can see it being like, oh man, that thing just keeps taking games. That's absurd. That's crazy. All you need is a sat, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Especially if you recur it with like a recurring nightmare-esque effect.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great card. Don't get me wrong. I just think that like, that's a really good point. I think the point you were making was that the format evolves. And as new cards are added in, a lot of old cards just don't have the power that they used to. And I think a lot of these, you know, like Worldfire, that's not a fun card, but it costs a million mana, and it will win you the game most of the time when you cast it, but it's how different is it than Expropriate, really?
Yep.
Yeah, Sway the Stars, too, like another card that's like annoying, but costs a million mana.
Coalition Victory, please unban it. I just want to have one Coalition Victory, that'd be fun.
It's really not even going to affect that much. You have to be in a five-color deck.
Yeah.
First of all, just that right alone, I think, makes it like totally fine. Because if you have to be in a five-color deck to even play the card, then it's just not going to have that big of an effect on the format.
Well, minus the part where you win the game. It's hard to argue against a lot of these unbans, knowing that the ban list has been a bit antiquated at times.
And there's people being like, well, if reoccurring, you could do this and this and this. But tell me, is that so much worse than the stuff that's already going on? That
right. You know what other three-mana green card that ruins things, like Yisan.
Yeah.
Or like way more powerful.
Food chain. Like, tell me why Food Chain's not banned if some of this stuff is. Because Food Chain is more of a combo enabler than any of the cards that I just talked about.
Pain of Servant, maybe not.
Yeah.
That might be the only real one there. Yeah, I agree.
Pain of Servant seems like it would just do more fun stuff. And if you want to be broken, you can already be broken.
I think the problem with Painter Servant is that it would just go into so many decks that would love to have it, that card would be like $100 in like a day.
Well,
I swear.
I don't think we can make bans and stuff based on like the cost of the cards.
No. Yeah. I'm just saying that's one card that I could see so many people being like, yep, it's just not to include now.
It's definitely combo-y, but at the same time, like, it's not, I don't think it's more powerful than Paradox Engine. It might be Paradox Engine good though.
Yeah.
We got to make a shirt.
Yeah.
I think the shirt just says, this shirt is Paradox Engine good.
Level good. Yeah. Paradox Engine good.
Let us know if you'd buy that shirt, because if enough people say yes, then maybe we'll design one.
We'll work on the copy, so we'll figure out the spacing and everything.
All right. I want to say, because we're going to wrap up here, that it's an honor to be, selected to be on the Commander Advisory Group, but I want you all to know that my biggest sort of platform or my biggest stance is going to be make as little changes as possible. I don't think sweeping changes are necessary. The format is not in trouble. It's not like a person coming into a company where it's failing and got to slash payroll and make sweeping changes. We're in the opposite situation. The
business is booming.
Yeah, the format is thriving. So for me, mostly let's keep going in the same direction that we're going. There's no reason to make really big changes.
Keep evolving, never stop changing. Changes are necessary, Josh.
Right. And I think that's true, but I just don't think big ones are, for the sake of it, are good. Like,
big changes are coming to this podcast.
Okay, to the listeners, this is maybe one of our more important to the listeners ever.
Yeah.
What do you think about the issues we talked about today, or are there other things you believe are even bigger changes or fixes that Commander needs that we didn't even talk about? We'll be reading these comments closely, and so there's a chance that you could actually, if you make a statement or the case for something, and Jimmy and I are like, wow, that's really interesting. I would say there's an outside chance that it's like, oh, I'll bring that up with the Rules Committee. So, yeah.
And a very direct way to get at this, again, at the $2 level on our Patreon, you can get on our Discord where we had the initial discussion for this, and also a lot of other really great minds in there talking about this stuff too, so you can share your thoughts and get some feedback as well.
Yeah, we all love this format and we all want the best for it. And so I know that's true of all of you out there, even if you disagree with us. And I think, hearing perspectives from everybody is good.
Yeah, we all love this format. And I also want what's best for your card collection.
That's right. If you want to get a hold of Reoccurring Nightmare or Byron, they're banned, by the way. Don't get those cards.
Cyclonic Rift.
And the reality is that I have no actual power to unban those things. So don't think that just because Josh mentioned it, it's going to get unbanned.
We're going
to
unban them for 1 second. Ready? And go.
That was it.
All right, it's banned again.
But yes, Cyclonic Rift, Deadeye Navigator. What were the other ones?
Paradox Engine.
Oh, yeah.
All these good cards.
Go to cardkingdom.com/command zone. You're going to buy Magic cards anyway. You're going to build decks. You're going to build your Prime Speaker Vanifar stuff. You're going to order your Ravnica Allegiance.
Oh, yeah.
If you just use our affiliate link when you do that stuff, you are helping this podcast stick around, game nights, extra turns, all of our content.
Yep. And of course, Ultra Pro is our other sponsor of the show. Make sure to pick up some Ultra Pro products next time you are at a local game store or even at Card Kingdom. Or hey, you know what? If you're thinking about buying some new sleeves, lots of great colors in the Eclipse sleeves.
You know,
the orange and the yellow ones, those are my favorite.
You've got the Black Lotus playmat right here.
Yes.
And they have matching Black Lotus sleeves, deck boxes, and dice bags even that I've seen out there. There's even a wall scroll that we have. So Black Lotus stuff, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just got to say.
I mean, Christopher Rush, rest in peace, man. I love this art.
Yeah. Many people who don't even play Magic, they know what the Black Lotus is.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Someone who was like, I had a card. My daughter had a card once. I need to look for it. I think it was the Black Lotus. I'm like, I don't think it was.
Yeah, because that was a college education.
Let me know. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the end set where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic. And this week, oh, boy, we are on fire.
Yes.
Because there have been two documentaries posted about the Fyre Festival, which was...
F-Y-R-E.
F-Y-R-E, that's right. This was hyped to be the greatest single
party,
private beach, private island, expansive artists.
The best private party in the history of the world.
Yes, with amazing models, Instagram opportunities around every corner, private cabanas, tents.
Blink-182,
all sorts of artists.
I like how Blink-182 makes that list.
They were at the top of
yeah,
all the billings. Turns out it was one of the greatest and largest
large-scale
debacles and frauds of consumers ever. And it was documented in a documentary called Fyre on Netflix. And then Hulu decided that they needed to jump on it and rushed out their own documentary called Fyre Fraud.
Yeah, I've only seen the Netflix one.
Yes, I have also only seen the Netflix one. Full disclosure, my friend edited the Netflix one, yeah. John Carman.
My friend as well, used to work at Rocket Jump.
Yeah, that's right. And I found out some very interesting details about why the other... It's interesting, in this whole thing about getting the truth out about something, someone else kind of wanted to jump... It's very similar to what the story is about. Someone else wanted to take an opportunity and release another Netflix... Or another documentary ahead of it, and that was Hulu.
Mm-hmm. Well, regardless of that, I think the Netflix doc was super entertaining and very interesting.
Very much so.
And like this weird train wreck that you just can't stop looking
at. Can't stop watching. And everyone knew it, but the owner, Billy, was so in denial and such a psychopath.
Yeah.
That he just let it happen and all these people got screwed.
They basically were going to throw this party on this island in the Bahamas and they had never done anything like this. So the logistics of like setting up the stages and having, you know, travel and lodging and everything,
safety,
for all the
water,
people,
plumbing, everything,
bathrooms, food, everything was like they sold like 6,000 tickets or something.
They sold 90% of their tickets in the first 24 hours. Some of these tickets cost upwards of like $8,000 a piece for these private cabanas and like all these things that people were promised. And you just get to watch it be a train wreck in slow motion as they realize that they had no time to do it.
They didn't know how to do any of it. They basically had sold an idea that they had no ability to fulfill.
Yeah.
So it's super crazy. So highly, highly recommend that you check out Fyre, F-Y-R-E, on Netflix. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, which one's the better documentary, yada, yada, yada. Fun fact, Fyre Fraud. So Fyre worked with the social media company that did all of this stuff for Fyre. Their name is F Jerry, but the F is the actual swear word. And the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix worked with this social media team. So a lot of people are saying, oh, they're biased, they're this and that. But actually, because of that, they had access to a lot of behind-the-scenes footage, raw footage, stuff shot throughout the entire process. And the Fyre Fraud documentary, people were saying, is quote-unquote more legit because they actually get to interview the guy, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
Little-known fact, they had to pay an exorbitant amount of money.
Exorbitant
amount of money to get Billy to interview on the Fyre Festival documentary on Hulu, a money that Billy also requested from the Netflix team, which they flat out denied after knowing how much of a
piece of work he
piece
is.
Piece of work he is. So very interesting to see. It's great. You should definitely watch. I mean, hey, watch both. I'm going to watch the Hulu one as well just to see what perspective they tell. I think the Fire one on Netflix is much more focused on the individual stories of the people that got messed up by Billy. And so this is sort of them getting a chance to finally speak out and tell the world what really happened. So I think that's really fascinating.
Also, the fact that they had, because when they did the Fire Festival, they were like shooting all the behind the scenes stuff, thinking that it was going to be great promotional material for the festival. But as it starts to like creep along and they realize like, we're 8 weeks away, but we don't even have all the talent booked, and we don't even know how to build a stage,
and we don't actually have a place for
people to sleep. And it, so it starts going downhill, but the people who are shooting the behind-the-scenes stuff are still around in the room shooting the stuff. And so it's pretty crazy to just have that kind of footage and access for such a train wreck.
Yeah.
Normally people would be like, okay, we don't want to document all this stuff, but because of the way it went down, they did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, it's all
check
there.
It out. It's fascinating.
Yep.
Something else that's fascinating are our good friends, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. Well, not them. So, I mean, they're mildly fascinating. But their show, The Masters of Modern, now that
it's
is
masterful.
Fascinating. Yes. They are a podcast about the modern format and all things competitive magic. You can find them on YouTube if you just type in Masters of Modern. They do video now. You can also find them at collected.company right next to us. And on Twitter, they are at the MMcast.
And I think they'll probably have some stuff to say as well, because Clan Ironworks.
KCI
got banned in Modern putting up a incredibly strong showing dex-wise at at some GPs as well.
Yep.
Clark Clan Ironworks.
Yeah, you can say it.
Ugh, it's so hard. I'm just glad it's going to be cheaper now so I can put it more in my decks.
That's true. It's great for us Commander players because that card is broken.
Oh, it shut up afterwards. It's Ashnod's Altar, but for artifacts, essentially. Yeah. All right, and our editor for the show is Josh Murphy.
Murph!
Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that feature at the beginning and end of the video show, as well as behind us here at the lovely Command Zone Podcast Studios here in California.
In sunny,
sunny California.
California. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.